Culture Affidavit, episode 171. No, seriously, who is Donna Troy? Hello and welcome to episode 171 of Pop Culture Affidavit, the podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Panarees, and this time around, I'm returning to comics and also returning to a topic that I've covered more than once on both the blog and on the podcast, Donna Troy. Now, I didn't think this was a topic I was going to return to, especially since I'd more or less stopped reading the Titans around the time the New 52 came along. I've dipped in and out of the team's adventures since then, and even read the first several issues of the most recent series when it launched in the middle of Tom Taylor's Nightwing run. But I dropped that book once Deathstroke appeared again. I didn't feel like the series was really worth picking up off the rack. I have been reading it on DC Infinite, several months behind, so I'm sort of caught up, but it really isn't a top priority at the moment. But last year, the 2025 annual came out, and it was solely dedicated to Donna Troy. More importantly, it was a Donna Troy story by Phil Jimenez. And without giving too much away, it wound up being one of my favorite single issues of the year. And that'll be my deep dive later in the episode. But first, I'm going to do a bit of a recap of how much this character's been a part of my life and this blog for a very long time. Search for Donna Troy over at popcultureaffidavit.com, and you'll see a number of the My Life as a Teen Titan posts from back in the blog's very early days. One, The Curious Case of Donna Troy, not only explains what I'd read of her origin up to that point in the original Marv Wolfman run, but also looks back on my life as a letterhead, where my friend Harris and I used to write letters every month to the Titans and the Team Titans, all of which we sign off, please kill Donna Troy. As I've said, it was literally a gimmick that we were using to try and get letters published. And if I haven't apologized to all the Titans editorial staff from back in the day, notably John Peterson, Rob Simpson, Frank Pitarese, and Kerry Kowalski, I'd like to do so now because you shouldn't have had to endure the letters of a 15-year-old little shit. You can hear those letters, by the way, in Pop Culture Affidavit episode 109. It was my part of the 2020 JL May crossover where I teamed up with a number of podcasts to cover the countdown to Infinite Crisis.
Infinite Crisis?
No, Countdown to Infinite Crisis.
I'm not following.
Shocking. The theme this year, I'm talking to a child.
In that episode, I did my best to make sense of Donna Troy's origin stories, starting with the Teen Titans series of the 60s and going all the way up through the 90s and the 2000s. My main feature was the miniseries The Return of Donna Troy, and I finished with a solo story from the Titans series that came out post-Infinite Crisis, which was about her relocating to Miami and trying to get her personal life off the ground. It was a nice ending. I also thought it would have been a cool backdoor pilot to a miniseries for her. Alas, that never happened. Other times she's been featured on the blog or in the podcast were in episode 91, Titans Together, where I looked at a few issues of the new Teen Titans, one of which was number 30, and that was where Terry Long proposed. Episode 121, Donovan Grant and I talked about the Judas contract. I talked with Shag about the X-Men and the Teen Titans at one point. And in the very first episode of my 80 years of DC Comics series, I said that her reunion with her adopted mother was one of my favorite moments in the DC Comics that I owned. Like I said, I have a very long track record with this character. I'll post links to all of those blog posted episodes in the show notes. Right now, however, I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version of her origin up until the DC Universe was reset for the New 52. Now, why do that if everything had been reset when the New 52 popped up? Well, I'm a masochist. Really, though, it actually factors into the books that I'm going to be doing a deeper dive into. So, the original origin was that Donna's mother, Dorothy Hinckley, who was dying, gave her up to an orphanage when she was a baby. She was then adopted by a couple who raised her for a few years before the husband died in an accident. Then mom, Faye Stacy, had to give her up, and Donna wound up being part of a child trafficking scheme. Faye did not know about this. However, before she could be sold, an explosion rocked the building where she was in, and she was rescued by Wonder Woman. She was taken to Paradise Island, adopted by Hippolyta, given powers, she became Wonder Girl. She and Robin uncovered her origin right before her marriage to Terry Long. Then Crisis on Infinite Earths happened. Since Wonder Woman's origin was retconned so that she didn't appear until several years into the Age of Heroes and therefore would have never rescued Donna because the timing didn't line up, Wonder Girl's origin was tweaked. Instead of Wonder Woman rescuing her, she was rescued by Rhea of the Titans of Myth and taken to New Kronos, where she was one of several Titan seeds who were given powers and trained, then had their memories of that time wiped until she would be old enough to truly have godlike powers. In short, she kind of became the Wonder Woman for the Titans of Myth. Here, she takes on the name Troia. She's Troia for several years. She gives up her powers at the end of the Total Chaos storyline. Terry Long leaves her. She becomes a Dark Star. She dates Kyle Rayner. She has a child with Terry Long, whom was kind of the cause of their divorce, etc., without getting too much into it. And then John Byrne happens. At this point, Donna's more or less wiped clean. And it is revealed that she's a clone of Diana who was cursed by a dark angel to live infinitely tragic lives. Her current life happened the way it did, kind of. What's certain, and what is still canon, is that John Byrne, or really Dark Angel, drove Terry Long, Robert, his son with Donna, and his daughter with his first wife, off a cliff. Donna eventually faces off against Dark Angel and defeats her in the Who is Troia storyline in the Titans series from the early 2000s. This is a story that involves the Titans from the Kingdom and Hypertime shenanigans. Then she dies in Titans Young Justice Graduation Day. She's resurrected on New Kronos and is led to believe that she's one of the Titans of Myth. Our Titans travel to New Kronos to get her back. Then we head into Infinite Crisis, where she leads a team to fight a cosmic anomaly, and it's eventually revealed that she's a time anomaly herself, having survived the original crisis in that fashion. Power Girl was another example of this. The universe gave her multiple origins to try to get her to fit into this new timeline. Dark Angel is actually a dark version of her, who is rescued by the Anti-Monitor, and is essentially his version of Harbinger. Well, until she got out of control. Donna is Wonder Woman for a while during the 52 year where Diana is more or less missing. So when the 1 year later rolls up and there's a new Wonder Woman series, she is in the costume. She's a major part of Countdown to Final Crisis. She joins the Titans again. She gets taken over by Darkseid in Final Crisis. She gets zombified in Blackest Night. She briefly moves to Miami, and then she helps lead the Justice League. And then Flashpoint happens, and the new 52 launches. It resets everything, and Donna Troy is nowhere to be found. So how did she come back? What's her origin now? And how did we get to this Titans annual that I'm going to talk about? Well, that's coming up after this. Stick around.
In 1987, a legend was reborn when George Perez and DC Comics recreated and relaunched Wonder Woman, helping bring some truth and understanding to the newly formed post-crisis DC universe. Between the bullets, the bracelets, angry gods, a new city, and a new supporting cast, Wonder Woman rejoined the never-ending battle for a more loving and peaceful way of life. Join me, Sean, and a bevy of all-star podcast guests on Peace Bound and Down, a Wonder Woman podcast, where we review each issue of the George Perez written and drawn Wonder Woman series and try to bring some peace to man's world each month. So find a little bit of paradise only on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. What's so funny about this love and understanding?
Oh, what's so funny about this love and understanding? So Donna Troy does not show up for a few years until she's created as a golem molded from clay to be a weapon to destroy Diana. This, of course, does not work, and she becomes an ally. Zeus chooses her to be the embodiment of fate, and the Amazons give her false memories, those of the Donna Troy that we've been following for decades. And then Rebirth happens. Wally West, who has returned in Rebirth, restores Donna's memories of their time as Titans. In the 2017 Titans annual, Diana reveals what the Amazons did while they were in a trap set by the Key along Batman, Nightwing, Aquaman, Tempest, and both Flashes. That's the Gollum with the false memories, etc. So this devastates Donna, and the psychic surge she has ultimately alerts Lilith to their location. Eventually, the heroes find the Key, and the rest of the League and the Titans show up to take him on. The Key does get away, but the annual ends with Diana apologizing to Donna. Donna accepts it, but the memories she has are still the ones the Amazon created. She's not sure what is true. And then we have, oh my god, how many crossovers? Dark Knight's Metal, Dark Knight's Death Metal, Infinite Frontier, Dark Crisis. I'm sure I'm missing a few. It's a lot. And during this time, the Titans disband and then they get back together. We get a relaunch title, like I said, in the midst of Tom Taylor's epic Nightwing run, which I cannot recommend enough. And a few months into that series, there's a four-part mini called Tales of the Titans. It's similar in concept to the Tales of the New Teen Titans that came out back in 1982. Donna's story, which is issue number 3, is written by Steve Orlando. Kath Lobo handles the art on pages 1 through 27. Bob Quinn does the art on pages 20 through 30. Adriano Lucas is the colorist. Rob Lay is the letters. Andrea Shea is the assistant editor. And the Titans group editor is Paul Kaminsky. This issue came out on September 26, 2023, and it costs $4.99. The issue opens up with a brief recap of Donna's origin, found in a fire, rescued by Wonder Woman, given powers by the Amazons. Then we cut to the present day where she is working a fashion show as a photographer, taking pictures for Vixen. She talks to Vixen about her photography career and fashion. Donna's phone pings with an alert about problems in Markovia, which has fallen under the dictatorial control of Baron Bedlam, who has introduced ethnic cleansing. Donna tells Vixen that Bedlam must go, but after his fall, there needs to be an effort to help the people rebuild. Donna jumps, Steve Rogers style, in the middle of the night, to the Markovian border with the help of Helen Kosmatos, who is the Golden Age Fury. She goes right into the country and begins fighting. She also photographs Bedlam's atrocities, which are concentration camps, mass death, and everything you associate with fascism in action. When she's confronted by Markovian troops, she gets help from her Pegasus that's named Discord. She goes for Baron Bedlam's castle, which is not really guarded too much by soldiers. They have like a security force, but that's about it. But it's full of prisoners, and they're essentially considered human shields. In fact, the whole capital city is almost like one big prison. Donna then comes face to face with Bedlam, who brags about powers given to him by Dr. Jace. Now, Dr. Jace gave powers to Geo-Force and Terra back in the original runs of the New Teen Titans and the Outsiders in 83. And he says he's a formidable match, and he proves to be a formidable match when he destroys her shield and injures her arms. She fights back, ultimately overpowering and defeating him. Meanwhile, the prisoners revolt and take over the castle with the help of Vixen, Aztec, and Strange Visitor. Markovia is liberated and Bedlam will be put on trial for his crimes. In Bloodhaven, Donna talks to Nightwing about how she only knows so much about who she is and that the Titans always seem to break up and get back together, so she feels unmoored and unsure of herself. Dick replies with, "Through all the changes, the challenges, the setbacks and wins, you've always been the same in the way that matters. You're always a wonder." On the last page, Donna enters her apartment in Manhattan. There's an envelope on the floor, and inside is a letter. "Dear Donna," it says, "I hope this finds you well. I have written several of these letters, but I've not heard back from you. I hope you have received them. Also, I found this photo and thought you might like to have it. Forgive me for being blunt. I do not know how to say this in any other way. I've been writing to you because I believe I am your father. Your mother Dorothy was my longtime girlfriend. I would like the opportunity to meet you and introduce myself." The picture is of Donna as a toddler holding her favorite doll along with her father and mother. She looks at a stack of envelopes on her desks and says, "Dad." I really enjoyed this four-part miniseries. It's very fun. It's not exactly like the old Tales of New Teen Titans series because it's not origin stories, but it just shows who these four characters are, and it does a great job with it. They're very well done. I do like how personal the creators get with the characters, and they've got the right tone, so I highly recommend going out and checking that one out. Now, Donna's story is true to who we've known her to be as someone who's fighting for the greater good. Her taking on Baron Bedlam reminds me of the late 90s when she fought villains like Red Panzer. She's the light against some serious darkness. The battle scenes are paced. The art is great. I thought that the twist of having the prisoners be used as human shields was a good one because she then inspired them to overpower what few guards were there. And as we left the battle with the Markovians telling her that Bedlam's defeat is only the first step, it's going to take some time to get the country back together. It feels like she did succeed in her mission. And the art in those scenes, by the way, it's great stuff. I'm not familiar with either of the artists there, but everything felt like, well, it felt like the type of superhero story that a series like this should give us. I can see a little bit of manga influence in there. It works really well. Even the way the last conversation between Nightwing and Donna is drawn is engaging. And that scene, by the way, is a great way to end the issue. Dick is the closest thing that Donna has ever had to a brother, and I've always loved that dynamic, especially how it hasn't changed in more than 40 years. Old school Titans fans remember that he's the person who helped her find her origin in Who is Donna Troy. So her coming to him about who she is and talking about her insecurities makes total sense. These two can be vulnerable with one another in a way that they might not be able to be with their mentors or other teammates. So Dick's reassurance of her is genuine. And then there's the last page. Now, I have to admit that I may have groaned a little when I first read this because I was worried that this would become a story or a quest that would result in that original Who is Donna Troy story being like marred again somehow. But it wasn't addressed right away, partially because Beast World happened, Absolute Power happened, et cetera, et cetera. But then in 2025, the page was addressed. And DC got the absolute perfect person to tell the story. The 2025 Titans Annual was released on July 30th, 2025, at the cover price of $5.99. And the creative team is Phil Jimenez, writer and artist. Arif Ferranto, colorist, Wes Abbott, letters, Andrea Shea, and Brittany Holzer were the editors. The main cover by Phil Jimenez has Donna in the center, holding her arms over her head, clasping her bracelets together while we see behind her Raven, Flash, Starfire, Nightwing, Cyborg, and Beast Boy. There's also a variant cover by Joelle Jones that shows Donna in three costumes, the her original Wonder Girl costume, the second one from the New Teen Titans era, and her current black costume. The story is titled Limitless. We open on a subway train. Donna sits reading her father's letter and looking at a picture of her birth parents and her when she was a baby, the one that was included in the letter she got at the end of the Donna Troy issue. The doll, by the way, is the one that has "Hello, my name is Donna" on the dress that they find in the ruins of the orphanage in Who is Donna Troy. So there's the continuity there. Her narration is to her father. So her thoughts are almost like she's responding to her father in her head. And those thoughts are interrupted by two guys who are looking out the window as they go over the East River. And they're talking about Titans Island. One of them starts telling the other who the Titans are. And a lot of this is like false information. He got from some like wiki type thing that is full of errors. The other doesn't think he's right, and the guy's like, "No, no, I know what I'm talking about." And then Donna butts in with, "Well, actually," and corrects them. She introduces herself as Donna. The guys get off the subway, and one of them looks back at her before he exits, and Donna winks at him. When they get off, he's all like, "Dude, that was Donna Troy." Donna's narration resumes, and she starts wondering what she's going to tell her father. How is she going to begin? Then she says, "It always starts with the fire." We have a two-page splash of baby Donna in the fire, Wonder Woman rescuing her, and a montage of moments of her history. The orphanage, her doll, the Teen Titans, her costumes, her romance with Speedy, opening her photography studio, her divorce from Terry, her son's death, Cyborg going full V'ger, and the current issue's cover. She contemplates her upbringing on Paradise Island. We see apparitions of the Amazons walk through the train. She also sees her son Robert, or at least we see an image of Robert on the page. It surprises her and she stands up. Then we flash back to Paradise Island. Donna's sitting on the floor of a palace room looking at piles of news clippings about Wonder Woman. Diana walks in and they talk about how Donna doesn't know exactly who she is. She also says she got in trouble for making fun of Hippolyta. She got caught. Diana says she remembers how strict Hippolyta was when she was growing up. And Donna points out that Diana was someone her mother wanted. Donna was an orphan brought to paradise, and she's actually still just a mere mortal. And then she says, why me? Diana says how much she loves her. She likes her. And she's so happy to have a sister. She always wanted a sister like Donna. In fact, she says Donna being her sister was the gods answering her prayers just like they did her mother's. Donna tells her that the world Diana protects is her world, and she wants to protect it as well as Wonder Girl. Hippolyta enters and the three of them talk for a while. At one point, Donna says, you're going to get rid of me because I was being bad, and Hippolyta's like, no, that's not how love works. Eventually, we cut to Paula's laboratory where the Amazons use the Purple Ray to siphon some of their powers and then give them to Donna. Next up is an early Teen Titans adventure, one of the first, where they battle the Antithesis, which was a psychic vampire that lived in JLA's mainframe. It defeated the League, so it was up to the nascent Titans to win the day. After this, Robin invites Wonder Girl to Wayne Manor. She's greeted by a skeptical Alfred, who takes her to the Batcave where Robin, Speedy, Kid Flash, and Aqualad are already hanging out. They explore the Batcave, and then they have a slumber party. At one point, the topic turns to how all of their parents died, although Kid Flash just says mine are just boring. And when Speedy wants to talk about something fun, he asks if anybody's gotten to second base. Donna admits she's never even found any base. They're like, how? She's like, well, I grew up with a bunch of Amazons, and I've never kissed a boy. So later in the Wayne Manor kitchen, Donna's grabbing a piece of pineapple upside down cake out of the fridge, and Robin sees her. Eventually, he says, I'd like to take on the responsibility of giving you your first kiss. It's an awkward proposition. So she just grabs him and kisses him. He's a little surprised. And after they stop, they both look at each other like, well, I didn't feel anything. Back down to the Batcave, the slumber party continues. And then Batman shows up and kicks everybody out because Robin wasn't supposed to have anybody over. Robin now thinks that Batman's going to get rid of him because he broke Batman's trust. So I'm not going to be with Robin. It's all over. He's upset. Donna tracks Batman down. Batman's all like he knew what the consequences were, and she's like, Robin cares a lot about you. In fact, you're the only person he's terrified of. He's terrified that you'll give him up. And Robin had all the kids over the house because Robin wants friends, and they're friends who are just like him. Batman's like, you promised to take care of him? She's like, yeah, and he says, you make your sister proud. And she's like, I'm proud being her sister. We then go through the history of Donna's relationship with Dick. All the name changes, the costume changes, her finding her true origin with him. She says that she's loved him but never been in love with him, and she considers him family. She then says that's what the Titans are to her, her chosen family. The train passes a huge billboard for a perfume that features Starfire. Donna then thinks about how long they were in New York and how much she loves New York. It was Sharon Tracy who truly introduced her to the city and also introduced her to Carl Woods. The two of them would then open a photography studio, and Corey would be their most famous model. This is when the flashback shifts to Donna in a client meeting, saying that they have a number of options available for models, but the clients just look at that poster from Corey for the film festival that Donna took in the Judas contract, and they say, no, we want her. Those clients, by the way, Marv Wolfman and George Perez. Donna then talks about the women of the Titans, where we flash to them camping out in Cape Cod, right around the time Donna's just gotten engaged. Among them are Starfire, Raven, Aquagirl, Flamebird, Bumblebee, Lilith, Duella Dent, Sharon Tracy, and Terra. In the narration, she compares each to a Greek goddess. Then she focuses on Corey, saying that she's beautiful as Eos, powerful as Thea, and as passionate as Aphrodite. She became the sister I always wanted. This particular flashback, by the way, is has Corey giving Donna her engagement present, which is staff fighting on the beach. Back on the train, as we see Robert crawl across the top of the page, Donna thinks about her love life. She's swiping through Tinder at this point. There's her complicated relationship with Roy Harper, because Roy had this child with Cheshire. Cheshire, of course, being the criminal assassin who once set off a nuke and killed basically hundreds of thousands, maybe millions in Korak. Donna gets off the train, and while she walks to Riccardi Street, she talks to Dick on the phone, saying how she and Roy recently had a really nasty fight because Cheshire keeps coming up. She can't understand why he still holds something for her when she's a maniac, right? She's awful. And Roy calls her out on her marriage and other failed relationships. Dick, who, by the way, this entire time is tied up by the Riddler, but the Riddler's unconscious and Dick's just working his way out of the trap, listens and offers some advice. Then Donna says she's arrived, and before they hang up, Dick asks her if she's told her other family yet about her father. That other family is the Evans. Now, they're her adopted family. Faye Stacy was the mom who adopted her. Prior to the orphanage fire, she was forced to give her up, remember, when her first husband died. Between the time of the fire and the climactic moment of who was Donna Troy, Faye had remarried, and her last name was Evans. And she essentially got adopted into that family. She's got a couple of half-siblings, or step-siblings, or whatever. So she has like lunch or dinner with them, and she tells them all about the letters from her father. She reassures them that nobody's going to replace them. And Donna then knocks on the door. A bald man with a red mustache answers and invites her in. He introduces himself as Carlos Rivera. Donna apologizes for taking so long to come and that she's grateful for his patience. Then Carlos tells her that Lou passed away about a month ago. Donna is shocked. We see Robert in between some panels. Carlos tells her to sit down and gives her Lou's story. He and Dorothy Hinckley, Donna's birth mom, were high school sweethearts. They were popular. They stayed together after high school, and Dorothy got pregnant. She had Donna in her early 20s. But things started to fall apart because Lou was deeply closeted, and having a baby with Dorothy was kind of like he thought that would change things or make him okay with things, but he wasn't changing anything. He left Dorothy without even saying goodbye and went to live in Mexico. That's where he met Carlos. Carlos says he pulled Lou out of his shell. They fell deeply in love. They eventually returned to the United States to get married. And that's when Lou found out that Dorothy had passed right after he had left her. Then Lou began searching for Donna. And when the Titans started getting a lot of press, he deduced that she was his daughter. He started writing letters to her, but was afraid to send them, thinking that she'd hate him for abandoning his mother, being gay, and starting another family. Carlos said that he sent the letters and stretched the truth because Lou had already passed, but he wanted Donna to know about him. He wasn't sure if she'd want to see him if Lou was already dead. Donna doesn't understand why he thought that she would hate him for being gay. She grew up on Paradise Island, which there's a lot of sapphic relationships there. But she is angry and a little resentful that he abandoned her and her mother. She's a little angry about finding out that Lou knew who she was and never reached out. She's angry that his husband had to pursue her and that her whole life, she really has wondered who her father was. And now she doesn't have this chance to actually meet him because he's gone. She tells Carlos that she got married at 19 and was obviously trying to fill a hole that her father had left. She says, "We had the perfect wedding so I could prove to everyone that I was the perfect girl. But I wasn't perfect. We divorced and then he died. And our son Robert died with him. It's strange. All Terry and I shared, and now I just don't think about him all that much. That's unforgivable, isn't it?" Carlos says he knows that her mind is going a mile a minute, but there's something he wanted to show her. That's when he takes her to the fire station where Lou served. The guys at the station tell her all about him. One of them, a guy named Ulysses, says that when he found out about Robert's death, Lou was devastated. Then they take a group photo where the guys sit on a ladder that Donna holds up with one hand. In a park, Carlos asks Donna about her son. She says it feels like he's been with her all day, and we flash back to that moment in the JLA Titans miniseries where Vic had Donna in this fantasy simulation, like a white room, and then there's just Donna playing with Robert. And that's when Dick had to walk up to her and like he had to pull her out of the simulation. He said, and he's like, Donna, the Terry, Robert, they, and she's like, I remember that moment because she looks at me and she's like, I know, and tears are streaming down her face. She talks about how guilty she feels for not being able to save Robert from that car accident. And she could never give him the childhood he deserved. Carlos says that maybe at that moment, Robert really was there and telling her that he's okay. And she's like, no, Cyborg was messing with our minds, our senses, etc. And Carlos is like, look, there are like these superheroes in the world. These miracles take place every day. And you should consider that maybe it was Robert. And now that he is in a place where only love matters. She says, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but you sound just like my mother. A few weeks later, we're back at Donna's apartment. She's hanging the picture of her and her parents on a gallery wall. She's also hung a photo of her and Carlos. There are a number of other photos on the wall, and if you look closely, many of them were panels from this very issue. She narrates that she was raised with such love, and she wants her father to know that. She doesn't know what life would have been like if he'd stayed, but does not regret the one that she's had. She's in some way grateful for that. We cut to Carlos's house where he's putting the same photograph of him and Donna on a buffet. Someone asks him how the gallery opening went that he just attended. He said it was fun. Some of the Titans were there. Donna's lovely and she's a talented artist. And that person who asked him about it, her name is Zoe. And she comes downstairs snarking about Little Miss Perfect. And Carlos calls her out, telling her to check her attitude because Donna's coming over for dinner the following week. She's like, why should I care about that? And he's like, Donna's your sister. We end on a rainy night. Donna is on a group call with Dick and Corey. They talk about her dad and Carlos. Corey asks if she's excited about tonight, and the two of them make her promise to tell them everything tomorrow. She hangs up and enters a restaurant. Seated at the table is Ulysses from the firehouse. He tells her that it's not his real name. It's just the nickname the guys at the station gave him because it's his favorite book. But then she says, well, what do we start fresh? And he says, sounds great. I'll start I'm Eric. And then on a full page, she responds, I'm Donna. Nice to meet you. We end in the white space where Robert has been the entire issue. He looks out at a black hole that has appeared, and then he's picked up by Dorothy. Soon, Lou walks up to them. They share a hesitant look, but then Robert and Dorothy reach out their hands. The three of them hug. And then Dorothy and Lou walk away, Robert between them, each one of them holding one of his hands. Donna's narration goes, so what did I tell you? I used to think I had to be perfect to be loved, that I had to be lovable all the time, that I couldn't make a mistake, even a small one, if I wanted to be worthy of the love I'd been given. But that's not true, Dad. That's not how love works. What's funny is that I did not pre-order this comic. I didn't know it was even coming out. I probably saw the solicitation and just kind of it blew right by me because I dropped the Titans by this point. But I do follow Phil Jimenez on social media and he posted about the issue the week it was coming out. And I was like, okay, Phil Jimenez, Donna Troy Story, annual. And I went to see if it was at my LCS probably like the next day or two. And I'm so glad I did. I mean, I think I said this earlier. It's one of my favorite single comics from 2025, and dare I say it's among my favorite Titans stories. Well, that's saying a lot. I've read a lot of Titans. I own a lot of the Titans, especially that Wolfman Perez run. And it's also saying a lot considering how many times are we due to the origin of Donna Troy, but really this, I think, is the true sequel to Who is Donna Troy? One of the things that made that Marv Wolfman, George Perez Titans run so special was the way the two of them created a team that was not only a family, but whose personal lives were in the spotlight as much as all the superheroing. And Donna was always different from all of them. She didn't seem to have any conflict about who she was, either as a hero or as a civilian. I figure that's why at this point she doesn't have a code name. I also figured that's what guided her toward having one of the most really normal lives outside the team. She had a job. She had a relationship, a long-term one. She got married in an issue that's like one of those rare superhero marriage issues where there's not a single fight. Nobody's in even in costume at all. This story that we have follows tradition by not having her father be a hero or a villain in the superpower sense, by not having this be some sort of ruse by a supervillain, a mission to rescue her father or whatever. Instead, we get this trip to see him and a journey through her life as well as his. Like I said earlier, who better to write and draw this than Phil Jimenez? He's done so much for the character of Donna Troy over the years. He handled a solo adventure of her in the Wonder Woman book, wrote her return right before Infinite Crisis. He truly loves this character and really is one of the few people in comics you can trust to get her right. He doesn't own her in the way that he's like the character's creator, but he's her steward, and Donna Troy really is his character when you think about it. Needless to say, by the way, the art in the issue is freaking gorgeous. Of course it is. I'm biased. I've been a fan of Phil Jimenez's since his very first work in DC, or at least the first work I saw on the Titans. There was a two-part showcase with Cyborg, and I showcase was it 92 or 93, a three-part Red Star storyline in the 90s. It was like right before Titans 100. Louise Simonson actually wrote it in the early 90s. And then he did the Teen Titans for a number of issues. I mean, really, the art here, it's just phenomenal. So I'm not going to go page by page through the book because that would take like a really long time. But I do want to talk about some of the individual aspects of the issues that did jump out at me. So first, then, it's really simple. Donna's taking the train to meet her dad. This woman can fly, and she chooses to take the train. I know part of it is so that she can process her thoughts and work up the nerve to see him, but it sends a signal to us, the reader, that this story is going to be, pardon the pun, grounded. It won't be an action thriller story. It's going to be personal and quiet and intimate, and the exchange with the fanboy she has in the subway is cute, too. I also like how Jimenez gets the big question out of the way really early. Which of the gabillion Donna Troy origin stories right now is the true origin? And he does it with a double page spread montage saying, pre-crisis, let's explore that. And then he puts us in her life at times we'd only seen really brief flashes of, or single panels of, or there were things that mentioned or that we didn't see at all. They were kind of behind between pages. Because, for instance, I don't ever remember reading a story about Donna on Paradise Island before she got her powers in the pre-crisis era. Maybe there was one. In fact, I want to say that in the original comic, she got the powers like pretty soon after getting there. So maybe like Phil like kind of moved the timeline a little bit. But her conversation with Diana and her worry that Hippolyta might disown her because she was being bad, it's a heart-wrenching. It's this really nice conversation that shows how much Diana loves her and that shows that Hippolyta, like, there's more to being your parent than just like making you follow the rules, and there's more to be the parent sibling relationship than like me having to be perfect, and if I cross you, I'm not gonna get thrown out of the house. In fact, I love that line. She says, "That's not how love works," and of course that's repeated at the very end. The Batcave scene is so great. That whole slumber party with Batman showing up and shutting it down. It's like really innocent of, and it's like kid superheroing done really, really well. It begins with Donna knocking on the door of Wayne Manor and Alfred opens up. She's got like her hands on her hips and is looking up at Alfred like really sure of herself. It's adorable. And Alfred's just got that Alfred skeptical look on his face and stuff. And then we have the kissing scene, right? So I have to thank Mr. Jimenez for having their reaction to kissing one another play out exactly like I've always thought it would. I've said this before in other places. I've always imagined Dick and Donna kissing to have a reaction like Lorraine kissing Marty in Back to the Future. She's like, for a second, I thought I was kissing my brother. And she even says, like, I love him, but as family. Just the Titans moments, the quiet ones that they have, I love them. The Marvin George cameo, the campfire in Cape Cod, as she talked about. She, what she does, she, like, compares every single woman in the Titans to gods that she's learned about or seen. The whole thing with her relationship with Roy and Cheshire being between them, it's complicated. It's sexy at points. It's very more adult than what we were seeing prior to that. But then when we get to Lou's story and with Carlos, that is heartbreaking. Jimenez gives us the story of Lou, and it's told more or less on one page, nuance, like in layers. Lou is human. He was in a position where he couldn't be who he was. He did something that was objectively pretty awful. He abandoned somebody and his daughter. And yet we later find out that he was a firefighter. He was looking for, he's complex. He's not a villain. There's flaws. Her reaction, she doesn't yell. She just sits there. It's this great one page. She's sitting in a chair and behind her is the picture, and the serpent is the picture of the three of them that she's had. And she said, "I'm so angry." And the narration of like, "Why did you do this?" and stuff like that. But she's not like raging and punching anything. It's just this quiet anger. And I think it's really, really well done. And then Carlos takes her to the fire station so she can see the other side of everything, the inspiring, heroic side of the person. In fact, I love how he tells her the honest part first. Not that the firefighting wasn't honest, but the reality of it, the flaws, that he left your mother and we came back and then he knew you were and was afraid to reach out to you and all that complicated stuff. And then he does the firehouse thing. So he isn't shattering an illusion and things like that. And I like the character of Carlos. He's great. I can tell he's working through his own grief in those moments as well. So the conversation with Robert in the park, and Robert was there, like he's earned that moment. Like we've seen this person, he's honest and mature and clearly wants a relationship with this woman in some fashion because she's a missing piece to something that his husband had and a connection to him that I think is maybe both of them are searching for. And I think it's just done beautifully. Robert, by the way, is in the background here and there. Like we see him in the white room crawling or talking or standing up or sitting or looking up. I can't remember the last time that Terry Long and Donna's son Robert was mentioned. Maybe during Blackest Night, because I think there was a Titans Blackest Night issue where he came back as a zombie, the Black Lantern zombie. Other than that, I really can't think of anything since then, but don't quote me on that. You know, I'm trying to go back many, many years in this. It's not exactly a popular character if you think about it. I did like that her line about Terry. It was clearly in her life because she had an absent father. I keep saying this is perfect, this is great, but really it really does kind of add up. And again, it's like done in like a sentence. And Robert was the bigger tragedy for her. You know, the divorce between her and Terry, it was back in the 90s. So there was a lot of 90s-ness to bits and pieces of it. Like I think they got attacked by like crime lord villains at one of her divorce hearings or custody hearings, whatever. But it was like their farmhouse kept getting attacked. He left her. He's like, "I'm fearful for my safety and the safety of my kid." And then he sued her for full custody and it got really, really nasty. And that was also very realistic, you know, if you think about it. And so Terry has been a closed book for her, a closed chapter, but how much has she come to terms with Robert's death over the years? And that last page, oh my God, I was choking up writing the recap of the two of them walking off into the white background as if they're walking off to someplace happier with Robert, like standing there, this little toddler, and they're each holding his hand because it's like, these are her parents. These are the people she's lost and keeps in her heart now, and they're okay, and she can let maybe the sadness go and have something nicer to hold on to or reassurance or the acceptance of moving on or whatever part of grief that is. And he does this as a writer and artist just so quietly. He knows how to do high drama, soap opera drama, that sort of stuff. But this is like allowing the scene to breathe and speak for itself and trusting us to know what the emotion is without it being hammered into us. And her line that she repeats about, you know, it's what love is or whatever. It's beautiful. I want Phil Jimenez to do a Donna Troy series, a graphic novel. Well, he did The Return of Donna Troy, but that had like a specific purpose. I want like something like where it's like she's superheroing, but there's also like her personal life, making it on her own, teaming up with the other women and doing a lot of the exploration and contemplation of the relationships she had here or furthering the relationships in a way that is the sort of, again, realistic woman in her late 20s, early 30s as a superhero. Honestly, in the very least, I just want to see her meet that sister, because now I'm like, oh, that would be really interesting. Like, how do they interact? How, what does she think? What do they think of each other? And is it contentious or is it cordial? Is it cold? Like, oh, I'd love to see that. So this is available on the DC Infinite app. I don't know if it's been traded yet. I'm sure that you could probably find it in a back issue bin. It's a fairly recent issue. So if your LCS might have some copies for around the cover price or maybe a little bit less. And even if you're not familiar with the character, you need to go and read this. It is an all-timer. It's so good. So yeah, we know who Donna Troy is now. At least for now. That'll do it for me. Next time around, I'm going to go back to television and I'm going back to the 90s. This time, however, it's early in the decade. And the network is Fox. And there's a certain show I want to talk about. A little teaser there, right? Come back for that. In the meantime, check out the blog, other stuff. I'm trying to remember to post to the Instagram and the Blue Sky and all that. And as always, thank you very much for listening and take care. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is hosted and produced by me, Tom Panneries. The theme music is Pop Rock by Scott Holmes and is used under Creative Commons licensing. You can contact and follow me via email at popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Pop Culture Affidavit, and on Blue Sky as Pop Aff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. And of course, you can find episode links, show notes, and blog posts on my website, popcultureaffidavit.com. Thanks very much for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.